Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Thursday morning MV Pro Call. Today is June 4th, 2020, and I'd like to welcome those of you that are here live, as well as those of you listening to this via recording, which of course you can do by subscribing to Motor Vitality on Google Podcasts or Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or iHeartRadio or whatever podcast application you prefer to use. We're there. You can also go to MotorVitality.com and listen to years and years and years worth of these, including many of the previous guest speakers and special topics that we have had over the last decade. Today, we are going to do things a little differently. We actually have a guest speaker on today, and I want to jump right into that and give Marianne a chance to have a conversation with us. Marianne Metzger, we are very honored to have her. Jen and I both have known Marianne for years and years and years. Mostly through, Marianne's been very involved with the Eastern Water Quality Association and setting that up, and also was working with National Testing Labs. In fact, she spent the majority of her career working with a lot of different laboratories, doing everything from technical support to vice president of sales. Just recently, some of you may remember we had Larry Gottlieb on as a guest talking about PFAS a couple months ago. Larry is president, CEO, owner of ResinTech, and
Scott Travis.
Good morning, Scott. Marianne recently has joined ResinTech to head up their new laboratory services division. I was really excited about this lab when I was talking to Larry about it offline, just because of they have put just the absolute state of the art equipment in there, and I think it's super exciting that Marianne is bringing her expertise there. Marianne also has been heavily involved directly with the water treatment industry. She's attended several of the events, has written for a lot of the trade publications and magazines. And like I mentioned, she's the executive director of the Eastern Water Quality Association, where she helps the board of directors in developing membership through education. Marianne, I am super, super excited to have this conversation with you. This comes up a lot with the dealers and the people that we work with. So welcome, Marianne Metzger, to the MV Pro Call.
Thank you so much, Kelly. I appreciate appreciate the introduction there.
Real quick, everybody, we're not getting any now. I'm sorry, Marianne, to interrupt. I'm not getting anything now, but should you have any noise going on in the background, please remember to be respectful and mute yourselves as we're having a conversation. So thank you. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Marianne.
Oh, no problem. I'm not, just so you guys kind of know, I think Kelly kind of gave you a nice introduction of myself, but I started out pretty much straight out of college working for National Testing Labs and then moved around. So testing has always been something extremely important to me. And working for National Testing Labs, I was able to look at many industries that use that, but I think my heart kind of went out to the water treatment industry just because of, like, being able to help people get that clean water, being able to help them solve issues with, like, heavy metal contamination and things like that. So to me, that's, like, probably one of the most important things about this industry is being able to help those people get cleaner water. So that's kind of why I started with the testing, and I've stuck with it. I truly believe it's something that's super important. There's millions of people across this country that have well water that literally have no idea what they're actually drinking. So
you know, I find it, I've known several people who have worked in various labs, you know, whether it be, just related to the industry at WQA or NSF even, or even that, some of the labs, certified labs that are out there. And most of them that I have spoken with do not have the viewpoint that you bring to the table, which is, I mean, you have worked in the lab, you understand what's going on in the lab, but you also have been out in the field and with dealers and manufacturers, working with them with the equipment and seeing both the lab level as well as the end-use level, how does that help your perspective in regards to what you do
and how you're working to build the lab there at ResinTech.
Well, I think, like, when I first got started in this, like, so many years ago, there was a little bit of people were like, if I don't know it's there, then I don't have to do anything about it sort of mentality. And now I think that's really changed with people becoming more aware of the fact that there's things in our water and, you know, and we have the technology to remove it. So I think that's always been really important to me. Is that when you find these things in the water, that there's a solution, that these people don't have to then hook up to city water if they're on a well, or drill a new well in some cases, but there are options for them to treat and get that nice clean water. So it's been interesting to work with the treatment guys. And help them to better understand the water testing end of it and why it's so important.
So most of the people on this call carry test kits out into the home, and they're testing the water, hopefully doing more than just the demonstration. Hopefully they're doing the actual test and understanding and explaining those results as they're demonstrating them. How does that differ? You know, I know it seems like a common sense question, but how does that differ from what you do? I mean, are the tests that we're doing in the field valuable and accurate? And why would somebody do both or one or the other, you know, to send water to a lab?
Well, first of all, there are things that you should run in the field, things that have what they call a quick holding time, meaning like the longer it takes for you to run that analysis, the more you could potentially get an accurate reading. So things like pH, things like chlorine, those are definitely things that you should be running in the field and are going to be way more accurate than if you send them into a laboratory. So I think field testing is very important. It also, I mean, you're testing for things like TDS and things like hardness and iron, you know, the aesthetic problems that you see. And there's definitely a place for that because, let's face it, these guys are calling you because they're having these problems. They're seeing these problems. It's the ones that you really can't see, the ones that you can't taste in the water, that are really going to be the problem. Like arsenic, there's no taste or odor to having arsenic in your water. And if you drink it over many years, it could potentially cause some significant health problems. So I think there should be a combination of both. In terms of testing, you should test on site. You should see what your TDS level is. If it's high, what's making up that TDS level? Is it hardness? Is it chlorides? Is it sulfate? What other stuff is lurking in that water? If it's well water, I definitely recommend sending it to a lab. Find out what you're actually dealing with before you treat it so that you're going to address everything that's actually in that water that may be a concern to your customer.
What don't you want people in the field, you know, the salesperson out there saying about the water test, both in or out of the lab?
Well, I mean, I've gone through some demos with some water treatment guys, and the sort of the one thing that they cling to, well, at least the ones that I've seen, and it's interesting in my particular area, but they show that TDS level and they say how dangerous that is. Well, we don't know whether that's dangerous. We don't know what's actually making up that TDS level. So I think when people hype that up a little bit and try to scare people with the fact that they have a high TDS level and that it should be reduced, you really should present the facts. This is a high TDS means there's lots of stuff in there. Our tests out in the field don't tell you what that stuff is. And that's where you should send it into a lab to find out. And that way you're presenting to your customer a viable reason to send a sample into the lab to find out what you're actually dealing with, because it could be arsenic, it could be lead, it could be calcium and magnesium. We really don't know until you actually do the test.
So what's the process? So let's say we, you know, I'm a sales professional and I'm out in the field and I have done some tests, you know, and I've done a hardness test so I can calculate and I know my TDS is 600. but I've got, you know, 10 grains of hardness. So I know 171 of that TDS is going to be calcium, magnesium, or a combination, hardness combinations. That leaves, you know, 400 parts per million of other things. I decide with the customer that we want to take a sample and send it to the lab. What happens? How does that work?
So what we do is we provide you with all the appropriate bottles that you're going to need to collect the samples. Yeah, it's not usually as simple as I'm going to just fill up a bottle of water, but it really depends on what you're actually testing for. So we provide whatever sample bottles preserved if they need to be preserved. You fill them up according to the instructions we provide. So you might have to remove the aerator, clean the aerator before you take a sample, and you fill up your bottles and you send them back into the lab. Now we have equipment in the lab that's going to be a lot more sophisticated than what you guys are using in the field. Additionally, the lab also runs a lot of what we call QC checks, or quality control checks. That's to ensure that the method that we're running, that we're constantly getting accurate results. So when you guys are out in the field and you're running a test, how do you know your result is good? You really don't. The only way that you start to know that your results are good is if you use standards to check that the method that you're using is accurate. And you have to use standards pretty frequently to ensure that you're maintaining that accuracy. So that's what the laboratory provides, is we provide a higher level of accuracy in terms of the tests that we're running.
So you talked about testing procedure, and I've always heard, and maybe, and Marianne, I'm sorry if I'm throwing a lot of these questions at you, that, you know, we kind of talked about a general topic, and so don't feel like if you have to stumble around, if you have to, you know, if there's an answer that you said, move on to the next question. I'd be happy to do. So, but I, you know, one of the things that I have always heard, and this came to mind when you were talking about testing, proper testing procedures, in terms of a bottle, you know, new homes generally everywhere in the country require a coliform and a nitrate test. Nitrate, you know, that one's pretty straightforward, but coliform, it's not uncommon, especially on a new well, for that to come back. Well, not even on a new well. You know, the homeowner pulls a sample, drops it off somewhere. And what I have always heard is that the vast majority of those are probably because of the they didn't disinfect the lip of the bottle or the spigot, or they didn't, you know, they touched the top of the bottle. Would you, number one, is that, do you think that's accurate, that that is the cause of a lot of the failures or the positive results? And if so, what is the proper testing procedure for us to pull a sample to make sure that the customer's not wasting money and also that we're getting an accurate result?
Yeah, I mean, that is a big one. When you're collecting bacteria samples, that's where you could potentially go wrong and potentially contaminate your own sample, like you said. I mean, there's instructions on how to collect the sample. So like I mentioned, you're going to remove the aerator from the faucet. You're going to clean that using, I recommend isopropyl alcohol, like an isopropyl alcohol swab. Make sure that you wash your hands before you collect your samples. Additionally, you might want to wear gloves. That's not necessary if you're washing your hands. Now, the bottles that are provided from the laboratory are sealed. Traditionally, the coliform bottles will have a preservative in them, so make sure that you're not rinsing that preservative out. Typically, it's something called sodium thiosulfate. It's a dechlorinating agent, so you don't want to wash that out, especially if you're collecting a municipal supply that has chlorine in it. One of the biggest mistakes that I see when collecting the sample is people will set down that cap. You know, they go to fill the bottle, they'll set down the cap. So one of the things that I recommend is you're going to break the seal on the bottle, you're going to take the cap off, and then immediately fill it and put the cap right back on. Do not set that cap down. As you can probably tell, I've done that once or twice. And it's not fun, especially if you're not carrying an extra bacteria bottle in your car, which many of us probably don't.
Do you recommend having, you know, do you recommend the dealers or sale, do the things expire? Does the, you know, the preservatives in the bottles, do they expire? So would you recommend a dealer having some of these bottles laying, you know, on hand for, you know, so they could perform certain tests more expeditiously? Or what's the turnaround time on it? You know, would they need to have them on hand, I guess is the question.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's good to have extra bottles on hand just for those situations. I mean, when I was going out and collecting samples, yes, I had a cache of extra bottles that I would carry around with me. So it's a good idea to do that. You can always request extra bottles from the laboratory. The preservative in them is pretty stable. They do expire, so I recommend people use them up within, I think I want to say it's about 12 to 18 months that they're good for, so you can keep them on the shelves for well over a year. But it is something that you want to use up eventually.
And what about somebody bringing a sample? You know, somebody... What can happen if somebody brings you a sample? So, I mean, and I see this a lot, and I know it seems like a common sense question, but I see people bring samples in juice bottles, you know, where even the residual, even though they rinsed them out a lot, I've heard that can have an impact on things like pH or even a water bottle like a, you know, an Aquafina or Dasani bottle that they've drank out of, and then they rinse it out and brought you a water sample. Are those good enough for a lab test?
So we've gotten samples in all kinds of strange containers, bottles of rum that the lab got really excited about at one point. We're actually lead and copper samples. So, yeah, you don't want to use bottles like pickle juice bottles or anything like that to collect samples. Preferably, you want to use the bottles from the lab because they're pre-cleaned. They have the preservatives if necessary. But we all know, like, if you're in a pinch and you need to collect a sample, depending on what you're testing for, you can collect a fairly clean sample in a bottled water bottle. Now, I don't recommend that you drink the water directly from the bottle. I mean, you can certainly pour it out and drink it out of a glass, but otherwise you're potentially contaminating that sample. So I have recommended in the past, if you're in a pinch and you need to collect a sample and you don't have a bottle from the lab, get an RO clean bottle, dump the water out. You can use it for whatever, but then rinse that bottle out with the sample water that you're going to collect a couple of times, and then you can fill that bottle up. Now, I wouldn't recommend testing for bacteria in a bottle like that. I wouldn't recommend testing for volatile organics, but you could probably get a full set of heavy metals and inorganics and some of the wet chemistry out of that and still have a highly accurate test.
What would you say, so this is a question I had asked Larry, and I think it'd be kind of when he was on talking a little bit about PFAS and 1,4-dioxane and everything, but you've been in the labs for a long time and have seen, you know, it kind of gives you a pulse of the concerns across the country because people are sending samples in. What have you seen trending as far as what people want tested for, you know, and what do you anticipate there's the emerging contaminants, right? And you know, I mean, you mentioned arsenic.
Right.
I remember arsenic wasn't even on anybody's radar until they lowered the standard, and then bam, it was there. And of course, the last few years, it's been PFAS has been kind of the hot topic, and there was lead there for a little while, you know. Lead's still there, but it's sort of been, shadowed by the PFAS conversation now. But what do you see from your perspective, being in the lab, what are the hottest contaminants that people across the country are concerned with, and what do you anticipate we're going to see more of in the coming years?
Well, I think the PFAS chemicals are pretty common now for people to be concerned about, and it's really interesting across the country in terms of which ones people are concerned about. Because if you go down to, like, North Carolina, their list of PFAS contaminants is totally different than what New Jersey is concerned about, just because of the different plant that they have down there that's, you know, been contaminating the environment down there. So I think in terms of PFAS in general, that people are concerned about it. But in terms of the list of which PFAS contaminants people are concerned about, I think people don't know. We had so many, I think it was like 6 or 8 compounds that they did in the UCMR3, where they first kind of discovered this stuff is in our drinking water and at what levels. Well, the next UCMR, which will be the UCMR5, they're going to look for 33 of these compounds. Mm. So I think as methods start to develop and people start to become aware, more aware of what's actually in their communities, then we'll see like a more of a following in terms of specific contaminants. But right now there's so many of them and they differ from place to place that it's not consistent.
So that's a good question. So for those of you listening who may or may not be aware of this, PFAS, because we use that term very generically, PFAS, PFOA, right? So, but as Marianne's pointing out there, PFAS and PFOA is just a category of contaminants. It's not PFAS or PFOA is not one particular contaminant. In fact, I forget the number, but there are hundreds of chemicals that fall under those categories, right, Marianne?
Yeah, there are actually probably thousands of them. There are probably about 600 of them that are in active use in terms
right.
of, you know, what we're being exposed to.
So if we had a customer that wanted to know if PFAS was in their water, right, because most of the articles that you read about, they don't specify that. They just call it PFAS, right? That's been
right.
the term. It's been the generic term. So a customer comes to us and says, I want to know if I have PFAS in my water. Okay, and they have a lab. What do we, when we send a sample in, do we have to know specifically which of those 600 contaminants they want to test for, or can you do a general category PFAS category test to tell us, yeah, yes, you have them, and these are the specific chemicals that you have, or, you know, what would you do in that situation?
Yeah, so in that situation, I mean, you kind of have to know about what's going on in a particular area, because mm-hmm. this happened to me. We have a specific list of PFAS contaminants that we look for. Our list has 18 compounds on it. It's based on the EPA 537 method that, you know, there's like a handful of labs in the country that run it. So there's not even a lot of labs that run this analysis out there. So I have to be able to say, look at these guys and say, well, based on your list, you know, I only cover like 2 or 3 of those compounds. So, I mean, you kind of have to know your area in terms of what they're being concerned about and then look at what your lab is actually running.
Is that something somebody who didn't know that you could help with or give them guidance on?
Yeah, I could probably give them guidance on something like that. Like I said, down in North Carolina, they have very specific, there's an actual yeah. specific list. There's literally only 3 labs in the country that can run their list. Hmm. So, you know.
And are you one of them?
Unfortunately, we're not.
Yeah.
We run a partial list, but we can't run their whole list. I mean, the other thing that's kind of hard from the lab perspective is some of these chemicals don't even have standards. Like I mentioned,
right.
we run standards to ensure that we're accurate. Some of these you don't have standards for, so you have to go back. You have to go out there, get the raw material, and then develop your own standard. So it's pretty labor-intensive to get to that point.
Mm-hmm. I have one more question, and then I want to open it up, if it's okay, to others to ask questions.
Sure.
But just to follow up on the procedures, what is the turnaround time generally? So what amount of time from pulling the sample and sending it in would we be able to expect the result?
Well, our lab right now, we're committed to turning around samples quickly because, let's face it, in the water treatment industry, you guys want to sell more equipment. The longer it takes for the lab to turn those around, you know, the less equipment you're selling or the slower you're selling it. So our tests are, we recommend that we're going to turn them around in about 5 business days. So as soon as they're in the door, they will be out within 5 business days or less. Mm-hmm. There are some analysis like radiological tests that unfortunately they just take longer. So those usually run about 10 business days, but for the most part, we're running 5 days or less.
What about bacteria? You have to culture those, right? I mean, they have to, usually will have an idea of whether or not you're going to have growth within that 5 day period, right?
Oh, definitely. You know, for bacteria, it's within 30 hours once we start the incubation.
Okay.
That pretty quickly.
Okay, so we got about 5 minutes here. Anybody have any questions about labs or for Marianne at all?
Hey, guys, it's Scott Travis.
Hi, Scott.
How you guys doing?
Good.
So Resin Tech now has a new laboratory.
Resin Tech has always had a laboratory. They've now just opened it up to start doing water testing part.
Okay. Now, are these kits, they come kits, we can order them online through them? Or, because I like the stock kits. I mean, I've been buying kits from National Testing Laboratory from you for 20 years when you were with them. But I recently started using that My Tap Score only because they let me buy bulk kits and then just activate as needed.
Is right.
Something that you guys offer?
We certainly can, yep.
Okay. Beautiful. That is my question.
That was a good one. That was a good one. I got to tell you from a personal level, Scott, and look, I've always appreciated National Testing Labs too, so I don't want to have any kind of, you know, Jen and I and the Motive Vitality team, we try and avoid any endorsing any specific product or company ever. But I will tell you there are certain people within the industry that I have always admired and appreciate because there's a passion for the industry. And with Marianne now moving from National Testing Labs over to Resin Tech and also with Larry Gottlieb at the head there and the other Resin Tech members, I was absolutely thrilled about that. So that was part of one of the reasons I wanted Marianne on, because, you know, to kind of get that, to spread the word that they are doing that with the lab out there. I think this is going to be just excellent for our industry. It's just going to be a really good resource. But
definitely.
Any other questions? Any other questions or comments or thoughts for Marianne? Marianne, any final comments? Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Stacey. Go ahead.
I tend to normally have a couple of test kits in my trunk. Will the heat ever affect those? For when
that's a good question, actually. If it's bottles that don't have a lot of preservative, or if it's, like, I mean, you could put a, like, I definitely carried around sodium thiosulfate bottles in the back of my car, in my trunk for a long time. But once you get into, like, if you're doing organic analysis or anything like that, some of those preservatives, like, they have hydrochloric acid, I wouldn't recommend storing that in the back of your trunk. So it kind of depends on what kind of bottles you're trucking around with.
So the ones that I'm trucking around with are the ones for E. coli and total coliforms, though.
Yeah, you should be fine with those.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I was just kind of curious because it's like I know I've got some, you know, I normally keep 2 in there all the time, and as I use them, I replace them from the office. So thanks.
Yeah. You're welcome.
So just to be clear on when you're taking the bacteria test, you don't put the cap in your mouth to hold on to it while you're filling the bottle.
I never thought about that, but yes.
Yeah. I understand not putting it on the ground, but just to, you know, like sort of like you would with a pen or something, right? So don't do that.
Yeah.
You say hold it. Okay. All right. Good. Just wanted to make sure. No, don't put the cap that you're testing for bacteria for in your mouth. Got it. Any final comments, Marianne, to everybody out there?
Well, I would say don't put any of the caps in your mouth, first of all.
Yes, I think this is specifically for Kelly. I think I might be the only one that you might need to make that message for.
I mean, keep in mind there's preservatives in some of these bottles.
So oh,
it's probably
yeah.
not a good idea to put in your mouth. but certainly for anyone out there who has questions about testing, I'm a resource for you guys, so feel free to reach out.
Perfect. We will put your email address in the subject or the description of the podcast. So if you guys are looking for that, that will be there. Marianne, we're out of time, but I just really want to tell you how much I appreciate not only you coming on this call, but also what you've done for the industry. And I really look forward to working with you in some of the ways that we've kind of talked about as well. So. And I will give a little plug. Motivitality will be a resource for getting these tests, for purchasing these tests, or working with Resin Tech to be able to facilitate those tests. So watch for that on motivitality.com. And everybody else, thank you very much, Marianne. You're awesome as always. And
thank you.
We will see everybody else or talk to everybody else next week, if not before. So be safe, everybody. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Marianne.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.